If you're tired of one-sided conversations and mean-spirited rhetoric, it's time to listen and engage. This is The Rational Revolution, a look at today's issues through a politically purple lens. Now, here's your host, Chris Elfheim.
Well, hello again. It is Thursday. We are broadcasting live from downtown Green Bay. This is The Rational Revolution. I am Chris Elfheim, here with my favorite guest host, Mr. Alderman Dean Rash. Welcome back.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
You're kind of getting kind of comfortable in here. I'm going to have to shake it up, make you sit in a different chair.
Well, no, because they put a nameplate on this one for me. So apparently I'm a fixture now.
You're in Jim's chair, and do not ever forget that. That's the mayor's chair.
The mayor and I are friends.
Yeah, well, it doesn't mean you can sit in his chair.
I did have to lower it a little bit because he's a little shorter than I am.
Don't be picking on my buddy. No. Anyway, we are here. Our goal, once again, if this is the first time you joined us, welcome. If you are a repeat offender, welcome back. Our goal is just to, have some civilized dialogue about political issues that I think we're finding it harder and harder to talk about. Mm-hmm. Our goal is not to solve all the problems. Our goal is not to be a bullet point presentation. Our goal is to have a conversation between interested or at least semi-interested normal people and work through it so that perhaps we can hear a different side of things or educate ourselves and then find some empathy for others who may think differently. And I think we do a pretty good job of that. Tonight, we not only have the fabulous Alderman Dean Rash, but we also have former congressman of the 8th Congressional District, Mr. Reed Ribble on the line. Reed, we have you.
You do have me. Hi, Chris. Hi, Dean.
Right. Hey, welcome back, sir. Welcome back. I'm going to guess it's a little warmer down where you're at than it was up here.
Not a lot. We actually got about 7 inches of snow this week. It got as cold as 2 below 0. And so, but it's probably a bit warmer. It's 26 or 27 degrees today.
I take 26 or 27 right now.
No, I'm going to say that down there, that's darn cold. you are halfway down south as far as I'm considered. And if I had somebody down there and they were hitting -2, they'd be crying all day long. So.
Yeah, but 26, 27, we can be wearing shorts.
Yeah, I know. I walked around in a vest.
That's not a bad day. 26 or 27.
Sunny, that's like warm.
Next week is going to be 65, so we'll
all right, stop it.
We're going to be in the 30s. We'll be in the 30s.
All right, the most important question of the night before we get into our topic, did everyone get their Christmas decor put away?
Yeah, because the last time that was the big conversation.
And did either of you help at all?
Well, I haven't helped. I haven't helped, so I don't know.
That's one. No.
But we still have some wreaths up on the house.
Yeah, whatever.
Down. I'll be doing this week.
Reed, did you help your wife at all?
If at all is the question, yes. I did put the stuff back up in the attic.
There you go. Nice
that,
job.
That
nice
qualifies because I took some boxes downstairs.
If you haul something up at least one flight of stairs, you get a point. Two sets of stairs, you get a point and a half.
Wow. I appreciate the option there because I forgot about that part.
Nice job, guys. Way to go. All right. So tonight's conversation, now that we have established who likes and who does not like putting away Christmas, we are actually going to talk about a topic that I think needs to be talked about, which is dealing with prison reform and kind of the systems that we have, the judicial systems that we have. Now, one more time, I'm going to restate. Neither Congressman Ribble or Dean nor I are experts in this category. We just want to have a conversation because if we can't do that, then we don't know to go look for more information mm-hmm. or learn from it. And the reason this topic, there's two reasons this topic came up. One, I just finished watching the series Oz. Have either of you watched it?
I watched one episode, I think.
Oz came out, I believe HBO. Mm-hmm. HBO back in the 90s, and it was a dark drama surrounding a correctional facility. And the series is, I think there's 6 seasons, and it's all about the people. And it may be from an inmate. It may be the warden. It may be a prison guard. It may be the governor. Maybe the victim. So it's the people involved and kind of seeing the story from all angles. And I found it fascinating because, of course, there's some facts thrown in and out of there. And then my friend Dean sent me a text today because here in Green Bay, mm-hmm. and we have some challenges. with the correctional facility that's right here in downtown Green Bay. Not Alloway. Downtown, but in Alloway.
Yep.
And so we're going to lead into this conversation, kind of leads into us having a guest to really talk about the specifics of the Green Bay situation. So before we get into that deal, I thought it might be nice for us just to have a general conversation about where we are in the dynamics and the legislative stat and the reality of the prison thing going on. So I'm going to let, you know, let's just kick it off. Congressman, you've been around a long time and we respect your thoughts. So just give us a quick little feel on your thoughts on where we are and what's going on in terms of our prison population.
Well, I first off, I would say we put too many people in prison just to begin with. Mm-hmm. The U.S. has got some of the highest numbers of any country. With the number of people that are in prison. And I think when you look at the lack of mental health care, the lack of availability of mental health care, and particularly through the lens of history, you know, up to the late 1950s, early 1960s, we were treating people with mental illness. Mm-hmm. And but then the tough on crime crowd took over and we started imprisoning them.
Yeah.
And that's not a really good solution for people that have a mental illness is to throw them in jail. It doesn't solve anything. It sort of doesn't help them recover from anything. Yeah. And so just my gut feeling is that we put too many people in prison, and we oftentimes put people in prison for the wrong reasons. And
I think that the three of us can agree none of us want a violent person roaming the streets wherever right. we live, agreed. Not anywhere, right. anywhere. No one wants that. And I think that it's okay to agree on that and still find challenges in the system. And to make the statement, we put too many people in prison, the statistics validate that. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is crazy. We literally, I think I saw a stat, we are 5% of the population, but we have 25% of the world's incarcerated.
That's a crazy number. Now,
that's a real number.
And to the congressman's point, too, talking about the mental health side of it, my conversation today with the village president of Alloway, who will be our guest next week, Jim Rafter, he mentioned that at the correctional facility in Alloway, they have 13 beds in their mental health ward, whatever that looks like. And the percentage of population with severe mental health issues at that prison represents, and my number's not accurate, but over 300 inmates.
Holy cow.
So you have 13 beds to treat the ones that have severe mental health issues, and you have 300 plus inmates that are categorized that way. And that's one of the reasons why that prison has been in lockdown since this past summer.
Yeah. I think that we could absolutely go down the path of where we've decided to place our people that need mental health. And where are they being taken care of? Where are they being treated? If they're being treated, I think we also have to talk about the increase, the biggest increase in incarcerations by far percentage wise is in the drug related field. Now, again, we're sitting here as normal, rational people. I don't want to have a crack house next to me. You don't want to have a crack house next to you. Nobody's saying that we want that. But I think that we do have to talk about the imbalance and this whole, you know, there was an era where we turned into there was a spike. There was a spike back, if you look at the stats, in violent crime back in, I don't have the exact date, but I want to say in between 70 and 90, roughly? I think that was the highest point, which led to a lot of the changes, which multiple administrations got behind. It's not one side or the other. Multiple got in and get tough on this and get tough on that. And basically, we just started arresting everybody all the time. But can we agree that people from a lower financial comfort level tend to live more desperate lives? Is that fair to say?
I'm not 100% sure.
I wouldn't agree with that either.
Okay. So let's put it this way. If at any point in time, I'll just use me because then I know it's real. Mm-hmm. I grew up in a lower middle class, rural, central Wisconsin town. at no point in time did I feel it was necessary to resort to stealing something to get by. At no point in time did I ever feel that. Right? I mean, I'm not trying to excuse anything. I'm just saying that is it or is it not more likely the lower you are on the rung of financial security, the more likely you are to get yourself in trouble, at least some from a desperation standpoint.
I can't say that I would agree with that. I will say it has more to do with surroundings and the environment that you grow up in. Now, I had the honor of working as a college student out on the East Coast at the Hole in the Wall gang camp that was developed by actor Paul Newman. And we got a lot of kids that came in from inner city New York, inner city Boston, inner city Philadelphia that were all sick, you know, cancers, blood diseases, those types of things, AIDS. And some of those kids grew up in very, very poor homes. And the sad part was some of them had to use survival methods to get by because you had addicted parents, you had gang violence on the streets, and so they did things to survive. And those types of things I can appreciate in a different light, but I don't know that just being poor makes a person want to commit crime.
Isn't what you just described the same thing? You said based on their surroundings?
It is, but I think there's more to it than just being of low, you know, economic standard.
And Congressman, we got 30 seconds before we wrap up for this spring.
I've met a lot of people that had very, very low incomes that lived honest, hardworking lives.
Amen.
Just struggled to get ahead.
Okay, valid, so. Right? I'm not saying that all the... What I'm saying is if you look at the population of people that were incarcerated on a drug arrest, a drug-style arrest, is it fair to say that the largest percentage of those people, without having a stat book in front of us, come from a low to very hard background? Would you not agree with that? Still no.
Congressman, if you want to go first, because I'm going to say...
No, you can hold it, because I want you to...
Put you on the spot.
This is the point, right? The point is we see things from a different angle, and we want to be able to say that out loud so that I can understand where your thoughts are coming from, and you can understand mine. We're going to head into a break, so please hold. Congressman, when we come back, we're going to start with you. Yep. I want to give you a chance to walk through that. But again, our conversation, trying to be rational, trying to work through things together as a team here and move forward together. This is the Rational Revolution. Chris Alfheim, come on back on the backside. You know it's going to be a good conversation when the mic no more than gets shut off and we just keep on blabbing at each other and we have to shut it off before the mic comes back on.
Well, I had to do a lot of thinking before I blabbed. But.
All right. So again, we are talking about, you know, different views on the prison population conversation. And then we really want to talk about the effects and the ongoing effects of that. So, Congressman, you got cut off a little bit, but you had said that you don't necessarily agree with me that the increase in incarceration, especially on the drug-related charges, does seem to go hand-in-hand with a lot with the socioeconomic situation of those people.
You may be able to make that connection, Chris, but I think drugs are an indiscriminate weapon. They attack rich and poor. They attack men and women. And in fact, when I was in Congress, I was struck by the number of women in Northeast Wisconsin getting addicted to heroin, which was a relatively new phenomenon.
All of that is valid, right? All of that is valid. But my pushback is going to be just look at the data of what the race makeup of the incarcerated on drug charges is.
Yeah, and I get that, but I will tell you, down here where I live in Middle Tennessee, the street value of one tablet of OxyContin is about $110. And you have to have some type of means. Now, maybe they commit crimes to get the money, But I wouldn't say that it's only the poor people.
Okay.
Or it's only mm-hmm. black people.
All right. So let's go down that vein then. Okay. So this, mm-hmm. again, now we're kind of veering a little bit into almost yeah. more the jail situation, but let's go on that theory. The theory is that the drug issue is getting everybody. And I think that's fair. It's nasty. And whether it's pills, whether it's fentanyl, whatever, there's a lot out there, and that is indiscriminate. I think that's a very valid statement. Mm-hmm. So then I want to lead into then how come? Then why is the population? Yeah. And that's the next conversation. So this kind of leads more into the county, into the local section, not so much the prisons. But, I mean, there is an issue. There is a huge issue with arrests are made. People are locked up in the local facilities, and then they literally have to wait months and months to be finally assigned a public defender. And that, again, using those terms, that officially lets you know where they are on the socioeconomic level.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm. It does.
Correct.
Yep.
So they wait for 90 days. Now, first, if that were any of us, no, that's not true. If that's the case, if this person gets arrested for having something on him, right? And we're not saying he's distributing. We're not saying he's doing. We're just saying he's just
caring for his own use.
And he got put in, right? Yep. 90 days later, he has yet to be found guilty of anything. 90 days later, he actually gets his first appearance. He doesn't have, you know, $250 to post to a cash bond. What happened to that person's job?
They lost it.
What's going on with the? Now I'm not done. What happened with the family? What is the impact of someone who can't respond? As opposed to, you know, and the three of us, I believe we could agree on this. If one of our children, any one of our children, got into issue, what's the first thing we would do?
Spank them?
I'd get them treatment.
I'd get them a lawyer. Yeah. I would get him a lawyer immediately. Immediately. All of us in our circle of friends have connections to good attorneys. Mm-hmm. We would text, we would call, we would immediately, that our kid would be out of that place in probably 6 hours or less. Out. Now, we still have to go through the court system.
Right.
Right?
You still have the process.
But
you're
do
go
you
through.
See the difference? That this is where I'm saying that I think that's not, it's not legitimate to say it affects everybody, therefore. Because it's not true, because many of us have the ability to back our kids or ourselves out of trouble via the legal system because we can pay for it.
But I'm going to go a different direction on this, and I know you're not going to like my answer.
Reed might.
He might. I hope so. I might move to Middle Tennessee after this one. But for me, always the bigger issue has always been you made the choice.
No.
Yes, you got
talking
the
equity.
Started.
I'm talking equity here.
I'm not talking about whether it's poor or rich or whatever else. Everybody that got into that situation, it's indiscriminate, right? They all made a choice to try for whatever reason.
Valid. Okay, I'll give you that. And then, if nobody ever, ever, ever does anything wrong, we don't have to have this conversation. True.
So is the radio show
My
over then?
My
point
is,
where do we go here?
But there is discrepancy in terms of how you deal with it and the ability we have to deal with it and put it behind us.
Correct.
Without it tremendously impacting forward.
I agree with that.
You do?
Well, I'll wait for Reed's answer, then I'll decide.
All right,
go. I'm not sure I've got a good answer.
You don't have to have a good one, but you should have one.
Yeah, I know it. You know, I just look at the entire circumstance of drugs in our society and how rampant they are. Mm-hmm. And I don't come from a super affluent family, but my cousins and my aunts and uncles and everybody in my family are all pretty successful folks. But I've seen their kids get in the wrong crowd of people mm-hmm. and get the wrong friends. And then all of a sudden they find themselves in jail because they got caught with cocaine.
Yep.
And then when they get out and they're clean, 2 or 3 years later, they go right back to those same group of friends that got them in that trouble to begin with.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
and,
I mean, we...
And so we have a societal issue here, quite frankly, and that's what makes it so difficult to challenge, to fix. And because you can look at this, well, it's a demand problem. If Americans would stop demanding drugs, we wouldn't have this coming into the country. You know, and then you can say, no, no, it's a supply problem. We got to stop it before it ever gets here. But that circular argument has gone on for as long as I am old, and I'm 68, and there hasn't been a good solution for it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously.
But I can say, for the most part, putting people in jail is not the right approach from my standpoint.
Yeah.
These people need help in figuring out why they're taking drugs, why they're spending money that way, why they're handicapping themselves and debilitating themselves. What is causing this to happen?
Yeah. I don't disagree with that. I mean, we have an issue, and, you know, again, we started out on the concept of mental illness, but I do think that where someone is and the effect, the lack of ability to recover, right? The lack of ability to recover from a mistake is much, much bigger in one population. And in my, what I'm saying is that it's a generational thing. If your parents, if it's, you know, a 25-year-old guy, that 25-year-old guy, if he already has a child, you can see how now you just have two generations that are going to be affected by that.
Potentially.
We're going to move on into more parts of this, but it is a deep conversation that we don't have the answers to. But I think that if we don't have the courage to have a conversation, then we aren't doing anything to move forward. So again, Chris Alf, I'm here on the Rational Revolution. I have two of my favorite conservative friends with me, Dean Rash and Reed Ribble. We will meet you on the backside for the next segment. Come on back.
If you'd like to join the Rational Revolution and engage, download the Civic Media app wherever you get your apps. Choose your station, WGBW or WISS, and click on the text button in the lower right-hand corner. Looking at today's issues through a politically purple lens, this is the Rational Revolution. And once again, here's Chris Elfheim.
Welcome back, everybody. And into the next segment, we're enjoying the conversation. I don't know if we're enjoying the conversation, but I think it's a good conversation to be had. And we can obviously see that we don't necessarily agree on the vision of it. But I think the two things we have established is there are two major issues that are adding to the population of the incarcerated: drugs and mental illness. I think we agree that those are two big issues that we can address. I'd like to shift the conversation, if we can, to the purpose, right? So the purpose of incarceration is really only one of two things. It's either to theoretically get justice for the victim, or it's to correct behaviors. Agreed?
No.
No? All right. Wait.
No, I think
Reed, do you agree, Congressman? Do you agree or no?
I think it can be more than that.
Correct.
It can be more than that.
That's why I say no.
Okay, then give me another
overly
one.
Simplified.
Oh, okay.
But I mean, I guess from my side of it, you know, yes, justice is a part of it, but sometimes it's also to take that person off the street from a safety standpoint.
It's to protect the population.
Protect the public.
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that's a bigger portion.
So
of
we
it.
Agree that they'll go with the three then? To change behaviors, to remove from society, remove the danger from society,
yes,
and justice for the victim.
I could go with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So then we have, of the three, then does that mean based on the third one that we never let the guy that was a danger, guy or girl, a danger back in? Do we just keep them forever?
In some cases. And I think that's an interesting statement because for me, I lived in the country of Denmark for a while, they didn't have lifetime sentences. So even a person convicted of murder had an end date. And it seems to work over there.
Yeah,
right?
I think that I read that we actually have lengthened, and again, mm-hmm, restating, nobody wants bad guys, right? I mean, we get that. But I read that the United States has increased the terms substantially for the violent crimes, which is really contrary to the way the rest of the world works. Would you agree with that, Congressman?
Yeah, I think you're right. And on violent crime, because I oppose the death penalty, I'm not certain what the appropriate penalty would be for violent crime, mm-hmm. particularly crimes that are committed against children.
Yeah,
a kidnapping, murder, rape of a child. I think there are certain citizens in society that need an extra level of protection, which then anybody who perpetrates a crime against a citizen like this deserves an extra penalty.
Okay.
All right. So, I agree with that.
So for today's conversation, let's just focus on the rest then. Let's, because I think we maybe could have a deeper conversation about the length and the purpose. But for tonight's conversation, let's assume everything from this point forward is regarding the bulk of the incarcerated, which are not violent offenders. Okay? So with that in mind, what are we doing? What are we doing to help them be able to come back to the community and expect them, and help them meet the expectation of rejoining society in a positive way? What are we doing to help that, or what are we doing to stand in the way of that?
Yeah. Well, if standing in the way of it, I would say mandatory prison sentences stand in the way of it.
Okay, talk about that.
That's another conversation. But I think the state of Wisconsin's prison system actually does a pretty good job in for those that are in state penitentiaries to have certain types of psychological help, particularly for those that were sex offenders. I do think that the system, with the amount of money that the state gives them, works hard at trying to rehabilitate, I would even say, most non-life sentenced people. And whether people are responsive to the help or not, that's a totally different issue. But whether the state is actually doing that type of work, from my experience with the state, I think they are.
I watched a documentary on PBS last week, I believe. I believe the name of it is In Black and White, Wisconsin, something like that. And former Governor Tommy Thompson is on there on the judicial system or prison reform. And he talked about the fact that when he was in office, he was in that momentum of more prisons, more people get put away, penalize. And in that documentary, in his interview, he said that it was one of his biggest regrets, that at the time he felt he was doing the right thing, mm-hmm. but in reality, it should have been educate. And mm-hmm. I do believe that some correction has taken place to change that, but we kind of started, and the entire country went down this path of there's worse coming, we better get ahead of it now. And we never really changed out of that in terms of arrest patterns or incarceration. The violent crime has actually come down in the last couple of years. Not enough, but it's come down. And yet the incarceration rates are really pretty. They're down a little bit after COVID. But I think that one of the challenges that I have in the system is, you know, we talked about it. Dean and I used to work together. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of, pretty much every employment application in Wisconsin, there's a box that says, have you ever been convicted of? And mm-hmm. it's very difficult for someone, even if it was 20 years earlier, it's very difficult for someone economically to recover from something, even after they've paid the price, right? So what we're saying is there's a penalty that should fit the crime that we have to make sure is perhaps more proportional. But that punishment, once it's served, if we've done our job and given every resource to help them on their way, and they choose, because we acknowledge that not everybody is going to choose the right path, but if all being said is equal, are they actually going to have the ability to move forward or not based on the way that we still hold it against them on paper?
Well, and I think that's a tricky question, because there are some industries that, such as yours, where it'd be really difficult to work in it if you have a felony, especially if it was a financially based felony.
Well, sure.
To be licensed.
There's always going to be common sense in there, right? But, I get that.
Yeah, but I mean, there's other situations. And I used to work with hired truck drivers that were transitioning out of Singer Powers. So as long as they had CDLs and they were in good standing and they were transitioning out in the next 18 months, I could hire them through a program through the prison system and help them transition out. And then normally we hired them on full time because most of the guys were great drivers and great employees.
Yeah.
Not all the time, but I think that to the congressman's point, you know, maybe there's obviously more that has to be done in terms of how do you help them transition back in, and maybe I don't know enough about the state to know if we're doing a good job or not, but I do know that I've had people that have worked with me or family that have transitioned out and it's worked. You know, I think there's benefit there, but I also don't want to lose sight that there's always a victim behind the person we're talking about. And we have to balance that out somehow.
I agree. I think that Representative Mako from here in Green Bay had put forward a bill. I don't know if it was this last 2023, but it had to do with certain licensures. So there are some licenses that in the state of Wisconsin you are ineligible for if you were ever found, you know, you have to mark check on a box. And I think his effort was to say that, you know, yeah, but if this is a circumstance, and there are people out there that made mistakes, paid the toll, did everything right, and now let's let them move forward. Mm-hmm. And I think that little bit of grace, or at least thinking about it, my opinion, those things usually come from someone we know is in that situation, so therefore we start thinking of it. But the reality is there's an awful lot of people who, I can't ever say the word, but the recidivism,
right?
The recidivism.
Recidivism.
Yeah, I can't say that word. There's a lot of people, you know, that's a consideration. I don't know, Congressman, have you ever met Judge Everett Mitchell down in Dane County?
I did not.
Oh, my goodness. Very, very, very good man. Judge, he's running, I want to say it's a drug court, or it's specifically a court that's meant to find or help youth that have taken the step the wrong direction. Mm-hmm. And instead of throwing them in a pen where, honestly, they're not going to recover, the low income situation, it is working them through it and out and up. And his ratio of success in that program is like 82%. It is an amazing number, which goes to show that, again, if we can perhaps offer the right resources at the right time, we can help people that want to make those decisions.
Yeah, and I agree with that. Oh, I'm sorry, Congressman, go ahead.
No, that's right. Sure. I mean, and if you have, there's a lot of evidence that work release programs actually work.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, someone is incarcerated for a year for some nonviolent crime. If you allow them to work during the day and then return to the prison or the jail at night, they are able to continue to take care of their families. They're able to build a career. They're able to be rehabilitated because there's this benefit of actually working during the day. While simultaneously paying their sentence. And so for a lot of nonviolent crimes, the idea of having people able to work and to learn a skill or a trade while they're in jail is really helpful. When I was the CEO of the National Roofing Association, we were sending our digital training programs into federal prisons so that inmates could learn how to become a roofing worker while they were in prison, so that when they would come out of prison, there would be a job for them waiting for them.
Yeah.
And I'll say the other thing to this, and I believe, Congressman, you mentioned sex offenders. And one of the things that we do as a society is once they come out, even though they've come out maybe rehabilitated and trained or transitioned in, then as a community, we tell them they can't live here and we make it even tougher for them. And I will say in this area of Northeast Wisconsin, the city of De Pere is the only one that does not have residency restrictions for sex offenders that move into our community. And what we found is they're 100% compliant with everything they need to do. And when we were going through this conversation, I had many conversations with the police chief of De Pere, Milwaukee, and Green Bay, and they all said the same thing. We just want to know where they're at so they're compliant. And for me, as a person who's a survivor of sexual abuse, it makes sense to me to know where they're at. And so that's another thing we, as a society, that we do is we make it tough for them to get back into society because they can't live anywhere, so they live underground.
Yeah, it's all very difficult, right? I mean, if you were the victim of that person, you would look at that from a very different situation because
you would.
How do you know? How do you have faith? Because that is an excruciating thing to go through.
Yeah, the stats in our police departments tell us it's true, and it proves out in the city of De Pere.
And I think that's these are the kinds of things we have to talk about, because our gut reaction is, I don't ever want to let a pedophile go.
Correct.
Right? That's my gut reaction, because that would be the right thing. But are there circumstances where it does actually make sense? I'm not saying a pedophile, but all of us have fear of the boogeyman living next to us. Right. All of us have, and there's valid reasons. But at the same time, we have to open up our minds enough to say, but are we actually doing the right thing and moving people forward? I hear Bobby McGee in my ear, which means it's time for our final break.
Time?
Oh, no, I'm sure of it. I mean, come on. Congressman, how do you feel about karaoke?
I am not the right person to ask about karaoke.
All right, perfect.
Oh,
all right, perfect. Then
so
I'm going to sound great.
He's not singing us into our next segment.
All right, hang on, everybody. Rational Revolution, me and the boys will be back on the backside. Thanks.
We sang every song that Javi knew. Freedom is just another word for nothing left to lose. Nothing. I mean nothing, honey, if it ain't free.
On the Rational Revolution on a Thursday evening. It's chilly here. It's chilly in Tennessee, where our guest is joining us, former Congressman Reed Ribble, friend of the show. I'm so appreciative that you call in. In fact, this was an off night for you, but you have so much fun you volunteered and said, hey, I can get on. That's a true statement. I can post that picture. You know, and I love your willingness to, again, have these conversations. We're not trying to tell people what the right answer is. We're just trying to say out loud what we're thinking. And by doing that, I think that begins the conversation. And again, everything that's said, we may not agree 100%. We may have, you know, maybe there's inaccuracies, but what we're trying to do is say, this is what I feel, and be able from different perspectives to say, but have we thought about this as an option, or have we thought about it from a different perspective? So we do our best to do that. We came out of the break talking about the education or the solutions. And in the conversation, I mean, we have hit on mental health. We have hit on drug issues. We have hit on perhaps inequity in terms of the legal system and representation that allows people to kind of back out of trouble or not. Can we talk about what do we think? What do we think? And I'll let you guys go first. What could we do today in our youth, right? Because I believe you always try and fix something at the youngest age possible before it becomes a problem. What do you believe we should be doing that would have a direct impact on the systems of the problem with the incarceration population and the cost that goes with them and the society damage that comes from them? What should we do? What's your option?
Well, I think there's a lot of data that would show that damaged, dysfunctional families end up creating or propagating dysfunctional children. And anything that we can do to I don't want to use, I say prop up, but because only because I don't have a better word for it. Just how do we strengthen that family unit in such a way that we can enable and facilitate parents of children to be more engaged in their lives and you know, get away from your iPad and tablet and computer and actually be a part of their life, particularly when they're young. I just think there's an issue with the family here that is probably at the root of it all, but I don't know that I've got good solutions for it.
Dean, I'll let you go. I was so excited to jump in, but I said I would let you go.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I appreciate that answer because it's a tough one. It really is. I didn't have a lot of good thoughts going through my head, but the reality we've seen over the decades as the family unit has fallen apart, I agree. That's been a lot of the dysfunction in those families has created some of the issues we have now in the systems, the crime rates and the prison systems and the, you know, I think it's important to have that family unit together as long as they're doing well, but fathers in the homes are so important for kids. Fathers and mothers have very different roles and they both are needed.
Okay, my turn.
No, hang on.
No. You're both saying the same thing. Now you're just beating a dead horse. Okay, I get it.
I like dead horses.
And
sometimes.
I agree. I was raised in a two family parental unit. My dad worked swing shift. My mom was home with the three kids until we were old enough and then she got a part time job. Right. Sure. I mean, that's pretty normal.
Yep.
I think that by saying it's all about strengthen the family unit, to me, a little bit of that rings as let's pray away the problem.
No, not at all.
Let me finish. Yeah. Well, let me finish. I mean, I still go down, but what is the root behind that? What is the root behind there are definitely more broken families, and it is fair to say, I agree with you, that the more broken the family, the more likely there to be trouble. That's true. But what's the cause in many cases of the broken family? And are we looking at all at that problem? Because there is a reality. There is a economic issue. How do we based on the, you know, we know what it costs to provide for a family. We know where the wages are. We know that without a lot of backing or, again, generational prodding in the right direction to find success, that the person is going to stumble through school, right? Again, if the generation above us is not healthy, they are left alone. But why are they alone? There are people that are out there working three jobs. Well, now it's not their fault that, you know what I'm saying? So how do we address that? It's not all just because we had a bad dad that left the mom alone. That's not, there's more to it than that. And we can't.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
Okay.
I certainly didn't want to imply that this is the only cause, because there are really good families who have kids that are drug addicted in jail.
Yeah.
And they raised their kids right. They went to church and did all those things, and they still got in with the wrong crowd and ended up having a problem. And so I certainly wouldn't say that it's the only solution.
Right.
And it's the only place you can look. I would agree that families can struggle a bit financially, and so moms and dads can be less engaged with their kids.
I mean, there's a reason we have the brothers and sisters organizations are overloaded and on a waiting list.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Now, first, if the parents are taking them to the brothers and sisters, first, you got to give them props for that.
Mm-hmm.
They are doing their best. But the reality is there are a lot, and most of them don't live next to us. There are a lot of people that are just plain struggling, and they're working their buns off. And the kids are left to whether they make the attendance at school is down. They're not making it through. We aren't going to educate. Well, then what's that going to lead to? There are issues that I believe we should be looking at on a social level somehow to try and prevent the next generation of an overcrowding issue. And I think to ignore that is not doing justice to the conversation.
Well, and I'm okay with that. And I do see the economic side of it as a big impact. But if you have two people, you know, rowing together in the same direction to raise a family and do the best they can to support them, there's a much greater likelihood that there's going to be a positive turnout. Now, you always have exceptions. I get that. You always have exceptions. But I think that family unit what that looks like is so important to help get things moving in the right direction. It's a starting point. It's not the answer.
The challenge I have with that is that you're making a lot of assumptions on personal basis of who should be together and doing what. Yes, full family is better than none if that's healthy and those individuals are. However,
that's where I'm going from a starting
point. There's an awful lot going on. Listen, this is the first of this conversation, and no, we didn't solve it.
Nothing.
But we had a conversation to talk about some different things that maybe you haven't heard said out loud before to think about and put them in together. This is the Rational Revolution. I'm very, very thankful for those tuning in. Congressman Reed Ribble with us on the phone, Alderman Dean Rash, and myself, Chris Alfheim. We bid you adieu. We will see you next week. Come on.
Good night, everybody.
Good night. All right.